Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tomorrow, many people will gather for their yearly Thanksgiving feast with the family, but communing around the dinner table is something that our next guest thinks should be a priority all year round. They come to this idea from two different angles. One is a chef and one is a psychologist, and together they have three kids. Their book is called Eating Together, Being Together, Recipes, Activities, and Advice from a Chef Dad and a Psychologist Mom. And it creates a roadmap for how to make meal prep and meals a purposeful family bonding activity. Caroline and Julian Klaus-Ehlers combine their professional expertise to create a guide that shows how to forge healthy relationships with food and with each other. Each section of the book features both recipes and some life lessons. For example, the section on salad explains how honesty, rather than the deception, is always the better choice when it comes to food and even life. And accompanying the explainer is a recipe for how to make a winter salad. They write, quote, "Eating Together, Being Together is not a book about parents making healthy meals for their kids. It's a book about enjoying food as a family. Whether you are 8 years old or 80, mealtime is not only nutritious for the body, but also nutritious for the soul." Carolyn C.C. Klaus-Ehlers is a psychologist and professor of psychology at Long Island University, Brooklyn, and has a specialization in couples and family psychology. C.C., welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
And Julian Klaus-Ehlers has spent his culinary career at Michelin-starred restaurants and is currently the executive chef at Trattoria Bianca at the New Yorker Hotel. Julian, nice to meet you.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm well. Together, they're going to join us to talk about their book. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Get in on this conversation. What kind of family meal traditions and customs do you have in your home? As a parent, how do you approach family meals? Have you discovered certain things your kids prefer when it comes to helping out with the meals? We would love to hear it. Let's crowdsource this. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We're also available to you via social media at allofitwnyc. Or maybe you'll have a question for Julian or Cece as we have our conversation. Feel free to call in and ask. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can send them to us via social media at allofitwnyc. Okay, two careers, three kids. That's enough to keep anybody very, very busy. So, Cece, what was the inspiration for the book?
So, the inspiration for the book came from a friend of ours who said, you know, I just love Julian's cooking and you're a psychologist and the two of you really need to do this book together. And we said, what? Not sure about that. But then we really sort of thought about it more and started working on it. And then we started living it during COVID-19 when we were at home. And Julian, you know, as a chef who works 6 days a week, was suddenly home every day. And so we went from our sort of Sunday night dinner to having meals together as a family every day. And we thought there's something in this and something we want to share about this experience that we find is helpful.
I'm going to ask a practical question, Julian. When did you find time to write it? What was your writing schedule? How did you do this?
Well, that's a great question. So I squeezed it in between service and running around with our kids. You know, Cece's a great writer, so she was really an inspiration for me. And it was really a team effort. You know, the recipes were organic; they came from my experiences and what we've created and cooked at home. So this was it was a great fun project for us to do together.
Cece, as a psychologist, what were some of the themes you knew you wanted to approach in this book, Eating Together, Being Together?
Oh, I love that question. Thank you. One of the themes, I am a self-declared not good cook, and my children have shared that with me. I am getting better through the book. But what I wanted to share was that this is not about getting it right. It's not about being perfect. It's about sort of making your best effort and really working together as a family to do that. I feel like parents, myself being a parent, feel a lot of pressure these days, and our kids mm-hmm. feel a lot of pressure. And so it's really about, you know, let's be together and let's prepare food together and let's see how it turns out. So that was a big theme. I'd say a second big theme was really about the value of sort of being open to anticipating moments to listen to each other and be there for each other. So, you know, my oldest daughter is 19 now. She loves to cook, and she got that from Julian. And she'll just be in the kitchen cooking, and our six-year-old will be there. They'll be cooking together, and I'll just kind of be there. And it's so interesting, the conversations that can just come up from sort of being around. Because I know if I asked, you know, one of my teens, how are things going? You know, the answer is probably going to be fine. So it's really an organic way to start having conversations and building connections.
Teenagers get a lot of mileage out of fine.
A lot of mileage.
So, Julie, when you were thinking about this book and working with CC, were there things that you could apply from your the way you run your kitchen that would be useful for how to run a home kitchen with this idea of fostering conversation and also fostering listening, it sounds like?
Right. Well, you know, as an operator in a kitchen, so I'm the kind of like the chief guy, and so I need to not only direct but also to listen. So it's very important, even in a practical professional environment, this is what I need to do in my kitchen here at the restaurant. But at home, it also transpires that you know, it can really be a team effort, and for everybody to have their little part and to feel ownership of what they're doing, and especially for at home, when the kids are preparing something, they're more likely and more curious to try it afterwards, even though they might feel it might be a little bit I'm not sure kind of thing. They might actually try it because they've participated from the get-go. I remember doing a presentation quite some years ago, and our eldest daughter was then 4, and I was doing these short ribs, which I really love, and she came up to the area where I was cooking in front of all these people, and she grabbed some short ribs and said, turned around to the audience and said, "Oh my gosh, these are so good." And it was like, this is great. Mm-hmm. And this is not general food for a 4-year-old. It was quite sophisticated. And so these are the kind of experiences that we hope we've shared in our book.
My guests are CC and Julian Klaus Eilers. We are talking about their book, Eating Together, Being Together. Listeners, we'd love to hear some of your family meal traditions, customs you have. As a parent, how do you approach mealtime? How do you get everybody to sit down at the table? Have you discovered certain things that your kids prefer when it comes to helping out and preparing meals? Our phone number is 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 is the number. 212-433-WNYC. Or you can send us questions via social media at @allofitWNYC. You might have a question for Julian or CC. Maybe something's going on in your family you could use a little assistance with. 212-433-WNYC. Social media at @allofitWNYC. So one of the main themes in the book is the importance of creating healthy relationships with food from a young age. And the section on breakfast offers this idea. A lot of adults already understand the idea of mindful eating, CC. How do you translate mindful eating to hungry little kids?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of ways that this can happen. I think one is really giving kids opportunities to try things. And at home, we kind of say, okay, try it. And if you don't like it, that's okay, because there can always be some other type of food that is going to be equal in nutrition value. And then looking at different creative ways that kids can eat food. So a story that we really like to share is our youngest used to love bananas. When he was 4, he'd have like 2 or 3 bananas a day. And then all of a sudden he just stopped liking bananas. And in fact, the other day he said, "Mama, I don't know why I just stopped liking bananas. I just don't like them anymore." But he loves to make the banana bread with his older sister. He is in the kitchen cooking with her. He knows that those bananas are in there and he will eat it. So it's a creative way that works for him. So I think giving, sort of keeping the door open to trying different things and encouraging kids to try different things can be a really nice way to encourage eating mindfulness. And, you know, we all don't like certain foods, I would imagine. I mean, I've never met anyone who likes everything. So it's okay to not like some foods. And I think that's part of eating mindfulness too, to say, okay, what are your preferences and what are things that, you know, maybe doesn't really suit you?
Julian, how did you choose the recipes that you wanted to include in the part of the book about mindful eating?
You know, some of these recipes are kind of my favorites and some are our kids' favorites. So I really kind of drew on our experiences as a family. You know, there are many things that helped me decide what we would include. But it was really drawing from those experiences as having now two teenagers and a 6-year-old. So
what would you say is the most accessible of those recipes in the mindfulness section? And then which one is probably a little challenging?
So I love the veggies and dip. And one of the sort of activities here that you can do for young children and teens is just to put out a lot of different veggies in different bowls, beautiful colors, you know, orange and green and red and yellow, and then put out these delicious homemade dips, and then they can try and they can sort of dip and see. Dipping is such a fun activity mm-hmm. for all of us, and they can see, you know, your kids can see, oh, what tastes good, what is it that you know, their palate is saying, oh, I want more of this. But also in that, they're choosing and they're making mm-hmm. a choice. But the choices are all really good choices.
Let's take a few calls. Michael is calling in from Manhattan. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi, my pleasure. Growing up in an Italian-American house on Long Island, we, the seven of us, my five kids and the parents, we had dinner together every night, non-negotiable. And we all bonded. We all just knew each other really well. And I learned to cook just by watching my mother, and my mother was a good cook. So like as an adult, I've just always cooked for myself. It's just no big deal. And I feel bad for people who never internalized that ability to do that. And then as a teacher, I was a high school teacher and a yeshiva, and I would get invited to a lot of Shabbat dinners. And just the family was all together, and they sit together and they talk to each other. And you can see as a teacher in a school that the kids interact with adults so much more easily, because around a dinner table, they're interacting with multi-generational aunts and uncles, and the kids are just socialized in a way that I can't even imagine living a life where everyone's just eating separately. Like, what's the alternative? I don't even understand what the alternative would be. For a kid, I just had such a sense of security as a young person looking forward to every night. I knew I was going to go home and be sitting at a table with my siblings and my parents. That was just the norm. Like, I don't even, and I looked forward to it every night. And it meant, it showed it was important. You know, this was an important part of our lives.
Michael, thank you for calling in. Cece, that's an interesting idea of the safety, the idea of security that can come from this. Can you speak to that as a psychologist?
Absolutely. So routines and having a routine is definitely something that provides kids with a sense of security. I want to say adults also, but like, you know, knowing what the day is, planning what the day is, having expectations and knowing what those expectations are can really forge a sense of safety and security. And then of course, you know, as Michael was sharing with this sort of the mealtime, getting to know each other and getting to have conversations and getting to talk about what you're doing day is or has been, and knowing that you have that outlet. And that can be, you know, every day of the week, or it could be like for our family, it was Sunday night dinner, you know, when we were all together. So it really is, and we talk about this in the book, it's really creating a structure that works for your family and sort of corresponds with sort of the schedules in your family and some of the pressures that your family is facing.
Let's talk to Carla calling in from Manhattan. Hi, Carla. Thank you for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Good morning. The reason I'm calling is to talk about my strategy with my two boisterous boys. We've been eating dinner every night One's 19 years old and one's 16 years old. And one strategy to reset the meal if things get silly or crazy is to have everyone go around the table, including the parents and guests, and say what their best part of their day was, the worst part of their day, their good deed, and what they're grateful for. And we learn so much about our kids. You never know, like, what little things bothered them or what little things they felt triumphant and happy about. So it's been a really wonderful exercise in so many levels.
Carla, thank you for sharing that. Julian, what's something that you've heard that you feel comfortable sharing from your children during one of these kind of conversations, one of these dinner conversations that was really illuminating to you or really helped you with your relationship with your children?
You know, our two girls are kind of grown up, and but you know, I hang out with our son who's six, and you know, he shares things about his school day with me, about what he's thinking. And you know, when we're cooking breakfast together in the morning, you know, I take him to school and I get him up and get him breakfast. And this is a really special time for me and him, because you know, the girls are off doing their thing. Our eldest is in college, but this is our one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. And so he can really share some just very small things that he's going through at school. And it's really interesting. It's a very special time of the day, that part time of eating where there's nothing else going on. There's no TV, there's no electronics. And, you know, we kind of try and keep that a kind of rule at the dinner table is that, mm-hmm. you know, the electronics have got to stay off during mealtime, because this is a time for sharing.
Our phone number is 212-433-9692. We'd love to hear what kind of family meal traditions and customs you have. As a parent, how do you approach family meals? Have you discovered certain things your kids prefer or ways to enhance the family meal? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We'll continue our conversation about the book Eating Together, Being Together after a quick break. You're listening to All of It. My guests are Carolyn and Julian Klaus Ehlers. The name of their book is Eating Together, Being Together, Recipes, Activities, and Advice from a Chef Dad and a Psychologist Mom. I thought it was interesting in the book, you know, for a couple of years ago, Cece, and Julian, you can weigh in on this as well, there was a whole sort of movement about sneaking vegetables into the food, like mixing the meshed cauliflower into the mac and cheese, and your children will never know. And that is not your philosophy, that the two of you, you stress it's important to be honest with your kids about what foods they're eating. Either of you want to take this, why you prefer that approach?
Let me weigh in for just a second. So, eating is something that we're going to do for the rest of our lives. So we feel that it's really important to start young. And if you're hiding things, A, our kids can't learn what they like and what they dislike. And B, going forward, like just like Michael was talking about, he loves to cook. He loves to, you know, bring ingredients into his home and cook them. And so this is really a lesson, not just for nutrition, but it's a lesson for life that you're going to bring to your future life and to the life of your family in the, you know, when you're an adult. So these are the reasons that we really feel that, you know, we like to be upfront and open with what we're cooking with.
And Cece, you want to weigh in on that, the idea of being honest?
Yeah, well, you know, we found that when the girls were little, we'd have play dates and we'd often, you know, there was going to be food and we'd often hear, you know, understandably so from a parent, you know, my child isn't going to like the salad, you know, he'll have the pizza, but not the salad. And, you know, sometimes we assume things and then, you know, we love salad. And part of why we love salad is Julian makes an amazing salad dressing. And so, you know, then the friends would see our girls eating salad with the salad dressing. And then, of course, you know, they want to try. And then it was, you know, a call of, oh, my gosh, can you share that salad dressing recipe? And so, you know, we really want to encourage parents, like, to give kids a chance, like just to give kids a chance, because chances are they may really like some of the things that we think that they're not going to like. And if there it is, you know, the case that maybe after all that they really still don't like salad, that's okay too. There are other things that we can find and other ways we can encourage making choices.
Let's talk to Michael calling in from New Sparta, New Jersey. Hey, Michael, thank you for calling All of It.
Hi, thanks. That's just, I was sad I was near Sparta. Anyway, I have two things. One is that it was different when I was growing up. We used to sit at the dinner table, and my stepfather would read us the quiz. This is how long ago it was, from the Daily Mirror in New York. And that got us talking. So that didn't work out when my wife and I were parents. It just didn't. We couldn't get together all the time as well because she worked, I mm-hmm. worked, and it just was not as easy to do. The other thing is that we used to say she thought we were gods, but my mother thought we were gods because she always gave us burnt offerings.
Oh, ba-dum-bum-ching. Michael was holding the whole time for that one. you know, it's interesting. We are getting some calls, and I want to address it. Is for some people who are either single parents and or have situations where they cannot on a daily basis sit down with their families. It's just not possible because of schedules. Do you have any guidance for people for whom this would actually be a real challenge?
Yeah, we have a lot of guidance around that because it's a real challenge for us. And we definitely don't do this every day. And our sort of idea, and in the last chapter, we talk about setting the table for connection. For us, it's Sunday dinner because of Julian's schedule, also because of our kids' schedules. They're busy. Mm-hmm. And so our idea is to kind of be intentional for parents to kind of think about and talk with your kids about, you know, what works for our family, what kind of routine or what kind of schedule could we have for our family? What kind of structure could we have for our family? And again, there's no right answer. The answer is what works for you and what works for the schedules of and the stressors of what your family is facing.
Let's talk to Will calling from Newark. Hi, Will. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to share my family. I have a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old and my wife. We eat together on dinners. But what started us cooking together is weirdly enough was because we were eating out. We went out for fondue one night and also another night we went for a Korean barbecue, both of which the kids are involved in picking the ingredients, cooking in front of us and making us laugh and all that stuff. And from then on out, they've been, you know, interested in being part of the cooking part of our dinners. And that's all I wanted to share.
I'm glad you did share that. Thank you so much, Will, because I was going to ask Cece, you talk about in the book a little bit classical conditioning and how bad experiences can really, really have long-term impacts on someone's perception of food, or even if they associations with certain food create associations with other things. Would you explain a little bit about classical conditioning and ways to intervene if you suspect this has happened?
Sure. So classical conditioning is when sort of in psychology would say like a stimulus gets paired with something or some experience. So if you can think about maybe sometime you ate a food and maybe in that moment you loved it, but then maybe you had a bad reaction to it, or you, you know, got sick and then now you don't want that food anymore. That would be kind of like a classical conditioning because getting sick is now paired with the food. And that's kind of why, you know, we talk about that of food choice and preference and understanding that not everyone's going to like every food, and that's okay. And that's part of eating mindfulness is also knowing what you don't like. And sometimes that can be related to having had a bad experience.
Let's talk to Winnie in Harlem. Hi, Winnie. Thanks for calling the show. Winnie, are you there? I'll see if our
audio board is going to let us talk to
Winnie. Sorry, I'm here. Sorry, I'm here.
That's okay. Hi, Winnie.
Yeah, sorry. Hi. I'm calling because my husband and I have three daughters, 18, 15, and 9. And family dinners are extremely important to us. We have dinner almost every night together. My daughter just started college, so she's a freshman in college this year. And interestingly enough, not only is family dinners important to us, but having people over for dinner is important. And it's been a big part of our family and a part of our children's lives of having people over at our table and eating dinner together. And in fact, my daughter wrote about that for one of her college essays, how, you know, the family dinner and having an opportunity to debate all kinds of things. Nothing's off the table, you know, religion, politics, money, human relationships. And how that was a big important part of her growing up as a child.
Thanks for calling in, Winnie. Julian, where does grocery shopping, obtaining food, come into this conversation?
You know, once again, this is part of ownership. And really, you know, I look at produce and I look at meat, fish, anything that we find in the grocery store. And, you know, I get excited about it because that's who I am. This is my profession. But I think that also imparts onto our kids as well. And when they come into the grocery shop with me, they can see, you know, we can feel the avocados or the melons or the, you know, whatever it happens to be, we can actually feel and see the produce there. And, you know, so then this is all part of the whole process of putting a meal on the table, and ultimately that sharing of food when we come together, it's really important. And you know, in New York City, there are so many farmers markets where you can find really interesting food, and you know, try it if you don't know what to do with a turnip or a kohlrabi or, mm-hmm. or you know, different foods. You know, look it up, try them out. It's really fun.
And I did want to point out that the word activities, Cece, is in the title of the book. Would you explain to our listeners how activities are folded into this? We've talked about the recipes. We've talked about the psychology of it. There are things to do. There are guidance. You have given us guides to things to do when we're talking about meals.
Absolutely. So the activity part was a lot of fun putting together. We wanted the sort of the life lessons and the recipes to have activities with them, things that you can do, like an activity book. And so, for example, a key life lesson with sort of the meat chapter is around listening and how we can communicate and how we can listen. And so we have an activity for young helpers, preteen, teen helpers, and grown-up helpers. The activity for young helpers is, you know, share your feelings with your grown-up helper. You know, tell them how you feel. Our son will often say, "Mama, I feel happy and sad. Which do you want to hear first?" And I'm thinking, oh, this is good. This is the mm-hmm. activity. And then for preteen and teen helpers, one of the activities there is communicate your conflicts. So, you know, we all have conflicts in our relationships at some point. And so to really sort of experiment with sharing with someone where you're coming from, what your conflict is, but also hearing, you know, what their perspective is and trying to understand. And then for grown-up helpers, the activity here is step back to step in, which is really about, you know, when your child is telling you about their day, and of course, this excludes a crisis kind of situation. But when your child's telling you about your day, like one of the things, if my child is hurting, I want to like jump in and have a solution. But then oftentimes I'm missing it because I'm not just hearing the experience and hearing, you know, in often the case, what my child is coming up with to kind of resolve that. So to really step back, to step in and hear and validate. So there are lots of, those are just three mm-hmm. examples, but there are lots of fun activities throughout the book about stuff like that.
The name of the book is Eating Together, Being Together. It is by Cece Klaus-Ehlers and Julian Klaus-Ehlers. Thank you so much for sharing your book with us.
Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yes, thank you so much for having us, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.